You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the S E A. You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the S E A.
Hello and welcome to episode number 173 of the Fabulous Pelton Cast. I'm your co-host Kevin Pelton,
and I'm Tristan Caracino,
and we are coming to you from Renton, Washington, home of the Super Bowl 48 champion Seattle Seahawks,
and it is game week for those Super Bowl 48 champion Seattle Seahawks. That's why. In celebration of it being the first full football weekend of our Lord's year 2019, I had to get a beer that celebrated one of the best quarterbacks in college history. That's the Johnny Utah Pale Ale. A quarterback who won the Rose Bowl. No, I'm not talking about Jacob Eason in the future. That's Johnny Utah.
I've never watched this movie.
Point Break?
I've never watched it.
You've never watched Point Break?
Yeah.
You're out here trying to educate me about Keanu, and you've never watched Point Break?
I trying to educate you about Keanu?
I don't know. You watched some Netflix movie, and you're like, oh, you don't know about blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, dog, I'm out here watching Speed.
Some Netflix movie. That's Always Be My Baby, for the record.
Great. Always Be My Baby is some Netflix movie.
I disagree, good sir. But even without having watched Point Break, I know a great quarterback and a great pale ale when I see one.
There we go.
So let's crack these open, because you know what?
What's
it's
that?
Not just game week for the Seahawks.
Oh, hello.
You know who else it's game week for?
Who is that?
Us.
Oh my God.
So we have recorded, first off.
Well, but I want to say before then, with these Johnny Utahs, another reason that we're drinking these is recently our good friends at Georgetown Brewing Company have started canning Johnny Utah Pale Ale. Previously, they'd been doing the Bodhisattva for a while, its counterpart, if you will.
Yes, I understand. I learned recently that's also a Point Break reference.
Okay.
No, I think you mentioned it when it first came out, but there was
numerous times.
There was some Point Break discussion on a podcast recently where I learned about
it. And
that.
You're like, oh, it all clicked.
It did.
The light bulb went.
Yeah.
They recently started canning the Johnny Utah Pale Ale, a beer that I think is even stronger than the Bodhisattva.
Interesting.
Up there, if we were to do Seattle's best beers, local beers, I think this is pretty high.
Yeah, I mean, if we thought sandwiches was contentious, best beers would divide families. Better than Manny's?
Oh, yeah, easily.
Interesting.
Manny's is like a Gen 1 Georgetown beer. Manny's is the Red Hook of Georgetown.
Fair. All right, so since we have last recorded a weekly podcast, we have put out two special podcasts.
Oh, my God.
So we got to open with a toast.
All right.
To the Seahawks, trading for Jadeveon Clowney from the Houston Texans for a bag of lint and a few coins they found in their pocket.
I remember that happening.
The Seahawks, essentially just in one transaction, pulled off the equivalent of trading a paperclip for a house.
Yeah.
It wasn't quite that much of a steal, but it was definitely a steal. And then we also celebrated that trade and previewed the 2019 Seahawks season with our dear friend, Mina Kimes.
There we go. So if you haven't listened to that podcast yet, drop everything right now and go and listen to Mina Kimes on the Pelton Cast. She is a gem.
But now we've got an extra special podcast coming up, and that is the live Pelton Cast. Not this one. This one's not extra special.
Yeah, no, this is...
Not at all. This Friday.
This is the tomato on the sandwich.
Two sleeps away as we record this podcast. Probably.
I've already been through some sleeps before. That's
true. Yeah. There was a nap previously when I got here. A maximum of one sleep away as you listen to this podcast. It is all going down Friday night, 7:30, doors at 7 at Belltown Yacht Club, where your nautical finest.
Okay. So some things that have happened with regards to PeltonCast Live this Friday, September 6th, at Belltown Yacht Club. So we'd been saying, you know what to expect at PeltonCast Live, right?
Yeah.
Come hungry, obviously.
Yeah.
We said there would be Rainier Tallboys. So I was tasked earlier this week.
You tasked yourself.
I'm saying that you tasked me. Of confirming that there actually were Rainier Tallboys, because we promised that last year for Peltoncast Live Part 2 at Barboza. And then we got there to find out that there were no Rainier Tall Boys.
You went with Part 2 and not Part 2 Electric Boogaloo?
Okay.
I'm just wondering.
I'm in the middle of a story here.
Okay.
So, earlier this week, I go to the bar that's attached to Belltown Yacht Club called Screwdriver Bar, right? So if you're navigating to Belltown Yacht Club and you can't find it, navigate to a bar called Screwdriver in Georgetown.
Don't go to Georgetown.
Screwdriver in Belltown, very near to the Crocodile. So,
and you can also go hang out there if you get there before 7 o'clock, even though the doors to the show don't open until then.
That's the other thing. Come hungry. Also, come early.
I thought you were going to say come thirsty.
Well, so
that went without saying.
Screwdriver is a very good dive bar in Belltown. It's cans and bottles only, right? No taps, but there are slushy drinks.
But are there tall boys?
So I get to Screwdriver and I walk in and I'm looking at the beers that they have on the wall, right? I'm like, do you have Rainier Tall Boys? And they're like, we have Rainier Bottles. And we have Olympia Tall Boys. And I'm like, okay. I love a Rainier bottle. Glass bottle Rainier.
Yeah.
It's a diamond in the rough, right? You don't find, like, you can't go to the grocery store and buy a Rainier glass bottle.
I can't think of the last time I had one. Well, actually, I can't think of it. It was probably when I was at Screwdriver last year.
They're delicious. Everything about this, somehow Rainier tastes even better in a glass bottle. I had one yesterday. It was great. But I was talking to the bartender, and I was like, is there any way for Peltoncast Live at Belltown Yacht Club September 6th that we could get some Rainier Tallboy cans?
Sort of like we got Rainier Tallboy cans for 1 week only at Lil Woody's when the Peltoncast burger was the burger of the week.
We are pioneers in getting Rainier Tallboy cans into locations because he said to me...
I don't know if that's the right word.
He said to me, I'll see what I can do.
Oh, there we go. Wow.
I was not sure what that would be met with. He's like, I'll call my Rainier guy.
Oh, you gotta have a Rainier guy. Why don't we have a Rainier guy?
We are the Rainier guy. I'll call my Rainier guy and see if I can make this happen on short notice. They were like, he's local, so I think we can turn it around. I'm like, okay, your Rainier guy better be local. Not 5 minutes later, he comes up to me and he's like, okay, I have 5 cases of Rainier Tallboy cans ordered for Peltoncast Live, and I would like to task you, the listener, as well as you, Kevin Pelton, and me, we need to finish all 120 cans of these Rainier Tall Boys Friday night at Belltown Yacht Club. Let's go!
Wow. That's going to be a... Wow. I don't know how much I could be contributing because I don't want to have to go pee repeatedly during the live podcast.
Oh, yeah.
So there's that issue.
It's an issue.
But
there will be Rainier Tallboy cans.
Let's definitely toast to that.
Let's toast our Johnny Utahs.
To toast without Rainier Tallboys, but we'll toast to 2 Rainier Tallboys because that is great news. That is a much better story than when you hinted that your story that you had to tell involved Rainier Tallboys, I got worried that it was them not having one, but it was quite the opposite.
I mean, it started with them not having Rainier Tallboys.
It was an emotional cliffhanger.
But here we are. They will be there, provided the bartender was telling the truth to me. And we will consume every single one of those Rainier Tallboys. Let's go!
Are you guaranteeing that?
Oh, we can do it. Come on.
Okay, so what else does the listener need to know before coming to Peltoncast Live? One thing I wanted to say.
Yes.
Make sure you're caught up on Ballers on HBO.
Oh, hello.
There's going to be some Ballers spoilers on After Ballers. And when I say make sure you're caught up, I mean you literally.
I know. I need to watch a lot of Ballers. They should expect, of course, maybe even being involved in After Ballers conversation, DJ Infrared, the official Peltoncast Live ombudsman, Talkin' Taco Time with @WooSang, which I think is going to be a fun one.
He's dropping some questionable Raging Cajun takes on Twitter.
The takes are going to be hot. You can expect a Seahawks season preview with Ben Baldwin in person. The man, the myth, the legend will be there.
Definitely the myth, given that nobody has seen him in person before.
Nobody's seen it. His first except ever public appearance.
Except us, is his brothers.
And the decider, Zach Whitman, will help us decide what is definitively Seattle's best sandwich with not one, not two, but three contenders in the mix this year. And let me tell you, it is steep competition.
All right, so I've been thinking about this a little bit. So earlier today, Zach, if you haven't been following along at ZJ Whitman on Twitter, has been journaling, I would say.
Journaling.
His experience of eating these competitors, and the photos have looked so good. I mean, it's made me super hungry every time.
I think I would say, finish what you're saying.
So I went to two of these locations today.
Yes.
I went first to the Other Coast. I went to the OG Other Coast in Ballard. Because I had to make sure that I got the very best the Other Coast had
to
offer.
Did you get a side of Raging Cajun sauce? Didn't even need it.
Wasn't necessary at the OG. Okay. Then after that, I went down to Pioneer Square and went to Tats.
There we go.
So it was a rare move for me. I didn't have the full 14-inch Raging Cajun or the full 12-inch Tatsdrame.
Still.
I went with a more modest 7-inch Raging Cajun and 8-inch Tatsdrame.
Oh, you only had 15 inches of sandwich in you?
A mere 15 inches of sandwich.
Heaviest sandwiches you could possibly eat. Wow, so you went back to back.
So I have now made a decision between those two. And now I have to go to Mo'ono and compare that to the winner of these two. And so that's what I think, is that we can't just pick one winner here. We have to rank the top three in order and do a point system. No, nope, we got to do it. It's a ranked choice ballot. We should be doing it. We should be doing it when we go to the polls.
You know what? Maybe we can have the fan vote be a ranked choice ballot. But come on. This is... We're going to have...
You have to decide all three of them. You can't just pick one and then leave the other two uncertain. We have to do it.
Okay.
I wore you down.
But we still need to. There has to be a situation to go to fan vote.
There's also the fan vote. That's a separate thing. Just like Dick's won Seattle's best burger, according to the Pelton Cast listener, and Taco Time Northwest won best taco. I think it won. Actually, we should probably revisit that at some point. We should determine that for sure.
I was trying to think of who won. I think Tacos Chuki's still won.
Could have been Tacos Chuki's as well. Could have been.
People just ate Taco Time that night and still voted for Tacos Chuki's.
Man,
cold.
I went to Tacos Chuki's on Sunday. Pretty good.
I would say, though, of our searches that we've done a search for Seattle's best burger, for Seattle's best taco, for Seattle's best dumplings, for Seattle's best ramen. This is the hardest final of any of those. And it's really not even close. There's no clear favorite to me going in. And I could see it through Zach's tweets. Like, it felt like after the first sandwich, he was like, oh, I know what the winner is. And then every sandwich that he ate, he became less and less sure of who the winner was.
I mean, the real Seattle's best sandwich is which of these I've eaten most recently.
It's tough. These are all really good sandwiches.
Yeah.
So... we will see. The decider will help us decide.
I'm so excited. I cannot wait.
And nothing says decider like three people voting on something where there are three choices. So again, we will see everybody on Friday night at Belltown Yacht Club. Again, I guess I should clarify, this is a music venue in the back of a dive bar. It is not a yacht club.
That should not stop you from wearing your nautical attire. But if you want to go with like Seahawks gear, that's probably appropriate as well. If for some chance you don't yet have tickets, the Pelton Cast page on soniccentral.com, in the post notes, there's the link there. And then the pinned tweet at Pelton Cast on Twitter to get your tickets. There's only a handful of them remaining.
Are we going to be releasing this as a podcast?
Of course.
All right.
But that shouldn't prevent you from going, because you're going to miss part of the whole experience. It's not only an audio experience. It's a visual experience. It's an eating experience. It's a taste experience. I don't know if we're involving any of the other smells.
A dinner and a show.
A that seems like it would be problematic if we were involving the other smells. Yeah.
All right.
Well, with no sandwich discussion this week, we get right into sports. It's time for our NBA Seattle update, sponsored by Pagliacci Pizza.
Because Pagliacci wants basketball back in Seattle, and so do we.
So you picked up a Pagliacci pie earlier this week, or did you just slices?
Slices.
Okay. Because you had the box.
Mm-hmm.
What'd you go with?
So they had, this was late. There was a summer squash.
Yes.
Which I got. Have you had the summer squash?
I have not. I think they alternate every other day, it seems like, between the summer squash and the pizza primo.
I got pizza primo in stores, you're saying?
It appears I can't pronounce that. Yes. Is the slice of the day to go along with their traditional slices.
So my theory about Pagliacci pizza slices is the best, pepperoni's always great, but the best Pagliacci pizza slice is whichever one is freshest.
That makes sense.
I would basically like, in a time like when I was working very close to a Pagliacci and would go there at least once per week, I would basically just ask which is the, and you can see it based upon the grease on it. You know what I mean? In a good way.
Yes.
And I think the summer squash had been sitting for a while. It was like 9 o'clock that I went there. I just finished up a Pelton Cast fantasy draft that I dominated.
Again, he calls himself fantasy genius.
I did.
Still hasn't won the Pelton Cast. Still hasn't made the playoffs in a Pelton Cast league. Maybe this year with two. This will be the year.
Be cool.
You be cool.
I conducted the draft from Screwdriver Bar, which the people who are in the draft room with me saw the story about us, about me getting the Rainier Tall Boys before you saw it, clearly.
Oh, you told the story in the draft room?
Yes.
I guess it's a good thing I never logged on for that one.
There you go. Because the suspense of me telling the story would have been lost.
It really would have.
Anyway, the fresh pepperoni slice, though, incredible.
Well, it sounds delicious. On the Sonics front, last Friday, as we mentioned a couple times, was a party for Jack Sikma's Hall of Fame induction held at Quality Athletics in Soto / Pioneer Square. I guess it's technically Pioneer Square.
Who owns Quality Athletics?
I don't know.
Cool.
I mean, that wasn't readily apparent. So it was a really fun event that was put together by the Sonics Arena Investment Group. Chris Hansen was there. Wally Walker, obviously, there as well to pay tribute to his teammate. Fred Brown showed up, a third member of the 79 championship team, the 40th anniversary of which we've been celebrating all year long. So it was really fun to have an opportunity to celebrate Jack Sikma.
Josh Henderson owns it. Of Skillet.
Oh, nice. Sadly, because of the fact that his Hall of Fame induction is this Friday, the same day as Pelton Cast Live, I can't go back to Springfield, Massachusetts to be there and see that in person. But
you know,
that was the next best
You'll be
thing.
Drinking Rainier Tall Boys instead of going to Springfield, Massachusetts.
And let me suggest, there just might be a toast to Jack Sikma at the beginning of the show. As well as Sikma, of course, another former Sonic, Paul Westfall, is part of this year's Hall of Fame class. They bring the total of former Sonics players in Springfield to 10. Which actually seems kind of low when you think about it. I would say of those, there are four that you would primarily associate with the Sonics. Gary Payton, obviously. Spencer Haywood. Sikma. And Lenny Wilkins. So it's a really small, it's a select group that, you know, are like primary Sonics who are in the Hall of Fame.
Instead of players like Patrick Ewing or somebody who just happened to have played.
Yeah, Patrick Ewing's the most extreme. I mean, Ray Allen is someone who I don't like. Boston, I guess, is the team he's most associated with.
You think but I mean,
Milwaukee. I mean, the Sonics are certainly in the mix, but they might be third. And his most iconic shot happened with a fourth different team.
All right.
So
a lot of shared history with Ray Allen. We still claim Ray Allen.
Of course. We're not ashamed of him in any way. I'm just saying, like,
we got probably Ray Allen's prime years in Seattle.
Yeah, I mean, his 2001 was pretty good, but his best individual seasons probably came here. It's just he didn't play here as long as he played in Milwaukee or Boston, and then obviously the championships he won with the Celtics.
Really, didn't play here as long as he played in Boston or Milwaukee?
I don't think so.
Wow.
He was here for 4.5 seasons.
Okay.
And he played in Boston for, off the top of my head, I think 5 in Boston and maybe 6.5 in Milwaukee.
Man.
So.
Been snorting too much time. Talk about that on The Good Place.
Anyway, so excited for that to be official this Friday with Jack Sigma.
All right.
On the NHL Seattle front, the NHL Seattle group announced Ricky Olczyk is the team's assistant GM. He will oversee salary cap and contracts for NHL Seattle. Served in the same role under new NHL Seattle GM Ron Francis when Francis was in Carolina. Olczyk's older brother, Ed, was a teammate with Francis with the Pittsburgh Penguins. Ricky did not play in the NHL. He went to law school after playing college hockey and worked for the NHLPA before breaking into the NHL ranks as assistant GM in Edmonton, and then spent the past year as a scout for the Toronto Maple Leafs after Francis's departure from the Hurricanes. So really not surprising that he would reunite with his former boss here in Seattle and help fill out this front office that's taking shape.
All right. The relation, I'm trying to think of what the relationship is like. It's kind of like me becoming like the Count the Dings booking agent.
Something like that.
Right?
This implies that I had a long NHL career. I think. So I like this. I like this. Also, his brother is apparently the commentator on the NHL NBC broadcasts.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Ed Olczyk?
Yep.
All right.
There you go.
Yeah, I'm telling you, it's exactly like that.
Very similar. The Seattle Sounders got a thrilling 4-3 win over the LA Galaxy on Sunday. A wild match that saw six goals scored in the second half. The Sounders led 2-0 and 3-2, but let both of those leads slip away before getting the game winner from Christian Roldan in the 89th minute, his second goal of the match to go along with scores by Raul Ruiz Diaz and Jordan Morris. Roldan got the start as a winger in the midfield in this match with Jordy Delem, Jordan Gustav Svensson in the defensive midfield, and then stayed out on the wing even after Delem suffered a head injury in a collision with Javier Arriaga in the first half. Emmanuel Cecchini playing his second match for the Sounders after making his debut previously in Portland came in for Delem. So exciting to see Roldan with that kind of offensive production in his first start in this new role in a while.
I mean, these last couple of matches for the Sounders, all of a sudden the season looking very different than it did a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, and it's weird. It's not like the defense has gotten much better. I mean, again, as has become tradition, both teams dramatically outscored their expected goals according to the 538 model, which slightly favored LA in this game. But back-to-back wins, this one over the Galaxy, another team that's right in the mix in the Western Conference, means the Sounders have now moved all alone into second in the Western Conference standings. Wow. 1 point ahead of Minnesota United, which got a win over LAFC, surprisingly, on Sunday. Two up on the San Jose Earthquakes, and three ahead of Real Salt Lake and FC Dallas. So,
how far back are they from first place?
Like 80 points.
Who's in first?
LAFC is really away with it by a mile.
They're wildly in first?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, but I don't think they have technically clinched first place, but realistically, they have already clinched first place.
They're going to win the Supporters' Shield.
Yeah.
Okay.
So the Sounders are just trying to get second in the top seed of the teams that will not get a bye in the first round.
Ugh. So wait, one team gets a bye?
Yes, they've now expanded to seven teams in the playoffs.
Okay.
Per conference. Okay, now the bad news.
Oh, no.
So the Sounders play this Saturday at the Colorado Rapids in a match that was rescheduled from April 23rd when that game at Colorado was postponed due to snow after the Sounders had already flown to Denver. This is an international break weekend, and so that's why the Sounders originally didn't have a game here. And it's really going to hit them hard because 10 Sounders have been called into national team duty ahead of this match. Seven of those 10 players started on Sunday. Everyone in the field, or everyone but Nicola Ladero, Kim Keehee, and Saad Abdul Salam among the outfield players, and then Stephen Fry, goalkeeper. Add in injuries to Victor Rodriguez and Alex Roldan, and the Sounders will likely have to call up players from the Tacoma Defiance under MLS hardship rules just to field a bench.
Oh, no.
So it's not great. I mean, you've got Ladero. At least you've got kind of an offensive weapon, but there's a reason that the Sounders try to avoid these international breaks. They tend to be hit much harder by players getting called up than, you know, like the other top teams have similar issues. But
can they choose to not play in these weeks?
You have some influence over it. Basically, like if you're willing to accept home games midweek, then you're less likely to play on these weekends during international breaks.
Okay.
but less of an issue for Colorado, which comes into this match 11th out of 12 teams in the Western Conference standings with 1.07 points per match. And not technically eliminated from the playoff race, but effectively eliminated from the playoff race. So a chance for the Rapids to play spoiler against this shorthanded Sounders team on Saturday. Rain FC took last weekend off for the international break as the U.S. Women's National Team Victory Tour continues. You love the Victory Tour.
Toast to the Victory Tour.
Rain FC back to NWSL action this Friday, hosting the Orlando Pride. The Pride come in last in the NWSL with a minus 18 goal differential. Ouch. Despite having Marta for most of the season, the legendary Brazilian star, she's played 12 of the 18 matches in addition to playing for Brazil in the World Cup and has 5 goals. Stop me if you've heard this before. No word on when Megan Rapinoe will return.
The Victory Tour rages on.
I don't know if there are any more. I think there's a couple more games left in the Victory Tour. So while you were drafting, I should say, at Screwdriver, I was watching the Seattle Storm come up with one of their biggest wins of the season on Tuesday night at Phoenix. We talked about the Storm a week ago. It looked like they had kind of like, you know, had fallen back to their level, had finally felt the full force of injuries to Sue Bird, who now has been confirmed out for the entire season. Earlier this week, and Brianna Stewart, having lost 2 in a row at home to put their chances of hosting a playoff game in the first round in jeopardy. And then all of a sudden, things flipped for them. They closed out the home schedule, a dominant victory, 92-75 final at home against the Atlanta Dream, and then went into Phoenix and got an 82-70 win that wasn't even that close. They were up by 20, you know, much of the second half against the Mercury before a late Phoenix run that was far too little, far too late. And this was a crucial game because it guaranteed that Phoenix will be the 8th seed and the Storm will finish no worse than 7th in the standings. And now they are the favorites to finish 6th and host the first round matchup, which will probably be either way against the Minnesota Lynx. So they now host in 2/3 of the simulations that I've run of the rest of the season.
There is no other podcast on earth that people are talking about their own WNBA simulations.
That is true. This is the only one.
Just casually thrown in too.
Oh yeah. I mean, you got to do that. 2 more matches left on the Victory Tour for the USWNT, at least this month. They've got some additional games in October coming up. But those are the only ones for now.
October's the next month, and there's 2 more games in September.
Well, the games are like the 6th and the 11th. Then there's a break.
The Victory Tour never ends.
The Victory Tour.
Permanent Victory Tour.
It's like the it's like 1984, where permanently at war.
Victory tours are always happening.
We've always been at war with Oceania. Exactly. Well, a victory that we do remember. UW football opening the 2019 season with a 47-14 win over Eastern Washington on Saturday, with both Fabulous Pelton brothers and the famous Cousin Katie in attendance. Thoughts?
This was great.
It was great.
It was especially stark given how close the previous 2 games against Eastern were. And we know that those previous Eastern teams had professional football talent on them.
Yes.
At the same time, for everything we know about this Eastern team, is they are still a very good team.
I mean, came into this ranked number 3 in FCS, were in the championship game last year, brought back their starting quarterback, who really didn't do much in this game, I wouldn't say.
I would say this UW defense, I mean, there were pretty good UW defenses that Eastern beat up in some of those games. And
they were very talented UW defenses. Let's go with that. I don't think they were yet pretty good.
We'll see how the season shakes out. But there are a lot of new players playing on defense for the Huskies and across the board. And Coach Pete's really just keeps doing it again and again and
throwing
again.
Throwing Kwiatkowski in there?
Yeah.
Nice. Jimmy Lake as well, obviously, in his role as co-defensive coordinator. Yeah, I mean, and even a lot of the players who were returning on defense, well, not a lot, but, you know, Miles Bryant playing a new position, moving to safety this year after starring at nickelback last year. So you had, you know, basically three new starters at corner.
And, I mean, it's also like we're having a conversation with Mina and seeing all of the NFL talent that the Huskies lost, all of whom are on the Los Angeles Rams now.
Not all of them. One of them's on the Bengals.
On defense.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Byron Murphy's on the Cardinals. All of them are in the NFC West.
It actually is kind of true that all of them are in the NFC West. But I mean, these are a lot of NFL players that almost every single one of them has seemed to have looked pretty good in camp also across the board. Like the Huskies are
I don't know. I mean, Taylor Rapp winning a starting job. Yeah. Otherwise, I don't know. Like everyone looks good in camp.
Mina said Greg Gaines looked great. Ben Burkervin looked great.
True.
Right? I have not heard anything about Byron Murphy, but I'm sure he's playing great. So this is an all-new defense, and granted, it's just Eastern, right? Like, we shouldn't get too ahead of ourselves just yet, but it's like, it does feel like Coach Pete Dunne did it again.
It was a legitimately scary game going into it, and then once the game started, it wasn't scary at all because...
Kind of boring.
The Huskies scored on, I think their first three possessions scored touchdowns. Including Jacob Eason getting unleashed for the first time.
Okay,
on the second possession of this game.
Let me walk you through the situation of being at this game with you. So the lines to get in were horrible, like for no reason, right? This is just UW Athletics doing their thing, being themselves. So me and Katie get into the stadium after the first possession is over. The Huskies have already scored on the Richard Newton
Wildcat touchdown.
Yeah, Wildcat touchdown. We sit down. The first thing you say to us when we get there is, because you're a hater at the core, is they don't trust Eason to throw any passes whatsoever. Everything he's thrown has been like a flare pass or a screen pass or whatever. Quick
out. I mean, the first drive, it was a bubble screen to Chico McClatcher, which went for 11 yards. There was an incomplete from the Washington 26. I can't remember what that was. And then a 5-yard completion on 3rd and 7 to Andre Bocelli that then they went for 4th and 2. And that set up the Newton touchdown from 23 yards out.
Then the first play from scrimmage that we see from the Husky offense, after you tell us this, I'm like, I guess that, I don't know, maybe that makes me a little bit nervous.
You're like, there's a reason they were going to play Jake Haener in this game.
How many plays did they run on that?
Well, they were in one play.
One play, boom, play action, 50 yards, a perfect pass from Jacob Eason floating into the arms of Aaron Fuller.
Andre Bocelli.
That's Andre Bocelli?
Yeah, Aaron Fuller's touchdown was much more difficult, you'll recall. One of the first of his two, at least.
Heisman watch started at that moment.
All right, let's remain calm.
Oh, you could hear outside of the stadium roaring the hype train. It was coming. The Jacob Eason hype train started there and did not stop through the rest of this game. So much that even the haters who were in the row next to us, you.
I was in the row. It makes it sound like a different row.
In the seats.
You could have just said sitting next to us.
Sorry, the haters who were sitting. Wait, re-record that. Re-record that.
No, we're not re-recording that.
The haters who were in the seat next to us, you. Even they had a shout.
I mean, here's the thing. I was not impressed in this game by Jacob Eason's deep ball because we all know he's got a really strong arm. That's a given. What I was impressed with in this game was his decision making, his accuracy on intermediate passes, and also showing, you know,
getting the ball out quickly.
Yeah. Showing standing in against pressure. I mean, there wasn't a ton of pressure in this game, but when it did come, he stood in there and still made the throw. He didn't complete that deep pass down the sideline where he got hit, but. You know,
pretty damn close.
Yeah, it was a perfectly good throw. So he completes 75% of his passes in this game, 27 of 36 for 349 yards, 4 touchdowns, no interceptions, a QBR of 95.2 in this game. So for comparison's sake, because of the fact that it is an FCS defense at the end of the day.
So that's the thing. Like, being excited about the Husky defense against Eastern, I think, is warranted because we know this is a good offense. At the same time, we probably know, and we've seen from these previous Husky games against Eastern, probably a bad defense.
Although it wasn't ever the Huskies having success in the air. Now, the quarterbacks the last two times they played them were, I think it was Keith Price's like first start, maybe? It was like right after he had taken over for Jake Locker, if I recall correctly. Or maybe not. Maybe I'm
that
completely
doesn't sound right even at all.
No, because it was 2011, so that can't be the case. No, I think it is, because he would have started in 13, would have been his last year as a starter. Yeah, and because Jake Locker was a starter in 2010. Yeah. Okay, so that was his first start.
You're going to draw a flowchart?
He had previously started, I think, a game when Jake Locker was injured, if I recall correctly. But it was like his first start is the starter. And then it was Siler Miles starting in 2014 in Coach Pete's first home game. So obviously they were relying really heavily on the run game in that one, as they scored 59 points. But if you look at Jake Browning, his three games the last 3 years, like after his freshman year against FCS teams, he was an average of 19 of 27.3 for 245 yards with 8 total touchdowns and 3 interceptions in those games. He completed 70% of his passes, but for 9 yards per attempt. So,
which is almost the same as Ethan's yards per attempt.
Yes. It was definitely the big difference here is the interceptions, the fact that Eason took care of the football. And last year, Browning had 2 interceptions against North Dakota.
Do we think that there's any evidence to suggest that Jake Browning got worse throughout his tenure?
There's definitely some evidence that he got worse after the after John Ross left.
Okay.
Yeah, I put it that way. I don't quite know what to make of it.
Because the worst game that Jake Browning played against an FCS opponent was last season against North Dakota State.
Yeah. The only time he got benched against Cal was last year.
Oh, man.
We're going to get to that.
But this type, it was a weird type of game against this type of opponent. Because in these games, it's felt like Coach Pete has wanted to basically like control the clock, run quite a bit, pass when you have to. This was a pass-first offense.
And that was the attitude they took on that first drive. I thought, even if it necessarily wasn't necessarily like an indictment of their faith in Jacob Eason, it was also just kind of what they expected to do in the game. But part of the reason is Savon Ahmed did not run the ball well in this game. If you had questions about him being an every down back, they weren't answered here. He had 15 carries for 44 yards. It was really Newton who had 12 carries for 91 yards who powered the rushing attack in this one. Now, I do feel like, first off, even though running backs do matter in college football, offensive line still matters a lot to running.
Yes.
And the fact that Nick Harris, the All-American center, left this game early in the first quarter, the Huskies were not very successful running the ball between the tackles, any of their players. And it seemed like Newton got more chances to get outside.
Have we heard any news about Nick Harris whatsoever?
He's, quote, week to week.
Okay. So he's not playing.
I don't know. I would not interpret it that way. So he was replaced by a freshman center, Mateo
Millay.
Yeah.
And really, it felt like this was honestly part of the story of the Jacob Eason game. If you were watching it closely, and granted, our seats are in the end zone, so we can see snaps pretty clearly.
Yeah.
There was no snap that was right in sort of like the perfect place where a quarterback would be looking for it.
Yeah, he was having to move around a lot. That deep ball that he missed was off a really awful snap.
A bad snap that he had to like bobble, collect, gets hit, and gets the pass off instantly, deep ball. I mean, it's clear to see like talent-wise what people saw in Jacob Eason.
Yes. Yes, it is. Also distributed the ball, like got it around to a variety of receivers, despite the fact that we learned before this game that Ty Jones, one of the wide receivers you were counting on coming into the season, will miss, quote, the majority of the season due to a wrist injury that had previously sidelined him per Mike Varela report just before this game. You had at least 5 catches for Bocelli, Hunter Bryant, who looked good, Aaron Fuller, and then Chico McClatcher, who, you know, made a very strong comeback after missing most of last season and leaving the team.
Okay, so here's the last thing on Jacob Eason, which we're not talking enough about Jacob Eason.
What are you going to say about Jacob Eason that people haven't already thought?
No, the most impressive part of this performance, though, was not the deep balls, right? It was.
Didn't I already say that?
But I'm saying he was making intermediate passes perfectly.
Yeah.
Right?
And
you were talking about other sort of like,
I'm pretty sure I used the word intermediate,
composure and things like that. He did not miss a pass. The only passes he missed were deep. And it's like, if you're going to miss those, missing a deep pass long is probably the best way to miss it.
Yeah.
Because if it's short, it's an interception.
tell baby fantasy genius. NCAA football 14.
Good God. If it's short, it's 7 interceptions the first half.
That was by Cal, wasn't it?
Oh God.
The other bit of news from the past week that Jake Haner is of Wednesday has officially enrolled at Fresno State, as was kind of expected for his new destination. So there you go.
That sounds about right. If we want to leave anybody alone, let's just leave Jake Haner alone, right?
Let's leave Jake Brady alone too.
Let's leave everybody alone.
Jake Brady did nothing wrong.
We're not going to leave Jacob Eason alone, though.
Did you notice, by the way, that one of your teams in your league, or I think it was your league, is named C. Mike Did Some Things Wrong? Direct subtweet of Taste for Profanity. All right, let's talk about Cal, because the Huskies quickly into the deep end of Pac-12 play after this one game against Eastern Washington in week two, hosting the team that handed them a loss last year in Berkeley. Cal comes in number 58 in Football Power Index based on just the one game, ranked 96th in efficiency on offense, 40th on defense, and 105th on special teams, I think largely because of the fact that they fumbled the opening kickoff.
Like one play is affecting this massively.
It's a very small sample size. They had turnovers on, I believe, two of their first three possessions against UC Davis, a very slow start, which saw UC Davis lead that game 10-0. After the first quarter, before Cal rallied to dominate thereafter in a 27-13 victory. The Bears
dominate. It was an arm's length game by Cal.
I mean, they outscored them 27-3 over the last three quarters. I think that's domination. That's a higher ratio than the Huskies managed against Eastern. So they're coming off just their second bowl appearance since 2011 last season. Justin Wilcox, you know, making some progress with the program. It was almost all at the defensive end of the field. Chase Garbers won the starting quarterback job by the end of last season, and really his path became clear this summer. 2017 starter Ross Bowers transferred to Northern Illinois, and dual-threat quarterback Brandon McElwain, who played a lot last season along with Garbers, decided to play baseball instead of football. Garbers went 16 of 28 for 238 yards, 2 touchdowns, and 1 interception against UC Davis. Also lost a fumble, and certainly ball security has been his biggest issue, most notably in the bowl game that they played last year, which was one of the most hilarious bowl games of all time that they eventually lost in overtime 13-10.
And that game was an extreme train wreck, right?
Oh, yes.
It was like turn after
for both offenses.
Yeah.
It was one of the most defensive games you'll ever see. You'll, of course, note that Chase Garber's younger brother, Ethan, is a 2020 commit at quarterback.
There we go.
To the University of Washington.
Hello.
Told the Seattle Times he will be rooting for UW in this game.
Against his brother.
Against his brother? Wow.
Wow. That's like me. I don't know.
So you were rooting for...
For the Athletic. I've got a pennant.
No game scheduled at this point. Cal breaking in a new running back, Chris Brown Jr., who had 36 carries for 197 yards and a touchdown in his first career start, replacing senior Patrick Laird. Averaged just 4.0 yards per carry last year, so tough to say how much of this was going up against an FCS
defense.
Kind
of an unfortunate name.
Well, yeah.
Chris Brown Jr.
Not that Chris Brown. None of Cal's top four receiving targets return either. So this is an offense with a somewhat different look than last season, despite Garbers returning at quarterback.
The look that might be the same is bad.
No, that could be the same. But the good news for Cal is they returned 8 starters from what was one of the nation's top 10 defenses, according to FBI efficiency last year, including senior linebacker Evan Weaver, who ranked number 2 in the nation with 155 tackles last season and returned the Jake Haner pick for the game-winning touchdown last year at Berkeley. I'm still kind of upset about that
game. Oh, my God. I was reminded of both the Oregon game, that this losses that the Huskies had last year. How many they lost to Auburn, and then they lost at Oregon and at Cal. Was that every loss in the whole year?
Well, they also lost the Rose Bowl to Iowa State.
But that was it.
You may have heard of it. They were so close to going, 11-1 during the regular season.
The team was so good, and every game that they lost was for nonsense reasons. But it'll be very interesting to see this new look Husky offense against what is going to be a very similar Cal defense. Obviously, the situation is very different. It's early in the season.
It's at home.
It's at home. It's going to be a different atmosphere. But We're going to know a lot about this Husky team after this game. We're going to know very early in the year what this Husky offense is really made up of.
I think one thing that I'm particularly watching is how the Huskies run the ball, because Myles Gaskin missed the game at Cal last year. Savon Ahmed got the start. He had 8 carries for minus 2 yards in this one. If you want to wonder where the questions about his ability to be at every damn back started, it was right here.
I was the one who said this, and you were like, no, he's easily an every down back. Was this recorded, or is this us chatting?
That was on the way to the
was an unrecorded pod?
It was.
Okay.
It was just a conversation.
You scoffed at that idea.
He was somewhat injured in that game.
Not an every down back.
We'll see. I think he will be better in this one. Intriguingly,
8 carries for minus 2 yards.
They're going out on a limb. He will have positive yardage in this game. Kevin Davis is on the record.
Rashad Penny stat line.
Sean McGrew had 7 carries for 20 yards. The only Husky running back who was effective was Kamari Pleasant, who had 12 carries for 62 yards. And he was almost completely buried on Saturday because of Richard Newton's emergence as the third player on the depth chart.
Was a surprise. If we were to guess who the third running back would be in this Husky offensive rotation, we would not have guessed Richard Newton, especially because I had never heard of Richard Newton going into the game.
It was all news to you. Kamari Pleasant had 5 carries for 7 yards in this one. I think many of those may have came late in this. Also, Malik Braxton, after we left, had 2 carries for 43 yards.
There we go.
So that must have been fun.
Free Malik Braxton.
Along with the safety, which we missed out on. And I'm going to blame you guys for making me leave early.
I'm going to blame you for having a sunburn after the game.
Blame yourself for not asking for the sunscreen that I brought.
Oh, I was wearing face cream.
Okay. Did you look at what I put in the notes the line for this game is? Don't look at it now.
I saw it, yes.
Okay. Can you believe it's that high?
Line is too damn high.
You're up by 14 points.
I actually can't believe this. I mean, like...
Objectively, you can believe it?
Objectively, I can believe this.
But then when you think about it subjectively, when you put on your Husky fan hat, or in my case, my Mina Kimes show featuring Lenny hat that I wore the game last Saturday...
I think the line should be 9.5 or 10.
I mean, yeah.
The Huskies are a much better team than Cal.
Yes.
The Huskies are playing the game at home.
It's also probably likely to be a fairly low-scoring game. It wouldn't be surprising.
I mean,
let's hope Cal, it's a low-scoring game.
Well, it's going to be a low-scoring game for Cal. Realistically, the path to victory for Cal in this game...
They just kept Jake Brownie in the game. They would have won.
Yeah, I'm aware. Thank you.
Needed a spark.
It was maybe the worst coaching decision of Chris Peterson's entire career.
I would struggle with. Was he the coach when they ran when they could have just about kneeled out the clock? I think he was in that game at Arizona
they
fumbled.
Oh, that was really bad.
That was a great one.
Also, I heard he ran a Statue of Liberty play in a bowl game.
Wow.
That'll never work.
I mean, it screwed up that like UW can never use a trick play now because of it. Coach Pete doesn't want to be that guy.
This is the greatest irony of all time.
No one hates trick plays more than Chris Peters.
Cal is not going to score a lot of points in this game. I think we can feel fairly confident about that going in. You know, if I had to put their over-under at like 15.5, I feel like they're probably scoring under that.
I think so, too.
The defense is going to play well. They're going to limit Cal here, and it's really going to be about Jacob Eason.
Yeah.
Against this Cal secondary, against an experienced Cal defense. And if he plays at 90% what he played as in the Eastern game, the Huskies will win this game comfortably.
I would expect the final score something like 24-13 or 27-13. Something like that.
That would be nice. But if this Husky team is a legit Pac-12 contender, they should win this game they should cover the spread.
Yeah. I mean, 27-13 would push. It'd
be close.
It's right in the ballpark there.
Cal is a team that they should sort of blow out at home.
They should comfortably beat. I mean, whatever the final score is whatever the final score is. But they should comfortably beat them. Well, just because you have... Backdoor covers and things like that. But one of the lessons of the last week is... Yeah, the Pac-12 Pac-12 North is not looking quite as scary. The Pac-12 in general, because JT Daniels torn ACL, that was a real bummer to see. He's out for the season, even though USC went on to win that game against a good Fresno State team, even a Jake Hainerless Fresno State team. KJ Costello, I mean, his injury doesn't appear to be as long-term. They also lose their starting left tackle, Stanford, and that opening win over Northwestern that was definitely not even an arm's-length game for them. So Oregon, I think Oregon played as well as you could have expected is reasonably at Auburn.
No.
I mean.
It was a neutral site.
Or in Dallas against Auburn. Like, they easily could have won that game. And we would be looking at Oregon totally differently if they had.
If they had a reasonable quarterback or offensive scheme.
Decision making. All those things.
God, I hate Oregon. Yeah, I mean, when you look at the Pac-12, I said to you, there's going to be a brutal Pac-12 loss by somebody. I didn't know that that team would be every single team in the Pac-12.
I mean, many teams in the Pac-12 won. Wazoo was dominant. They were the one team that probably exceeded expectations in week one.
Seems like people are hyped on Utah.
Utah played very well.
The teams at the very top of the Pac-12, I would say, all played pretty well. Even we'll include Oregon for the first half before Mario Cristobal took over. The bottom
UW
half
did what they were supposed to do.
No, that's what I'm saying. UW, Wazoo, Oregon, Utah all looked pretty good. It seems like there's a pretty clear top tier in the Pac-12. Maybe Stanford is in that mix, TBD. But
and you would have thought that USC had the potential to get in that mix. And now it's going to be much harder for them to do it.
Maybe. But this is what the Pac-12 is. We just have to get used to it. It's going to be a call. And most conferences are like this, right? I mean, like in the SEC, Tennessee lost to Georgia fucking State.
It's true.
Right?
It's a real fact.
This SEC experiences a brutal loss in the same way that the Pac-12 does every year. It just doesn't affect their standing nationally.
They also have a lot more teams, in fairness.
Do they?
I think they do, don't they?
How many more?
I don't know.
Cool. You can run your own simulations for women's basketball. But look, we're not a podcast about how many teams there are in the SEC.
That's a podcast math. What are the percentage chances of winning this game while I look this up?
I think they are 90%.
That is precisely what I was going to say as well.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow, look at us being confident. So it says that the SEC is called the Securities Exchange Commission.
There's 14 teams in the SEC.
There's two more teams.
It's two more teams.
This is like me arguing with you about how much harder it is to make it in a 12-team fantasy league versus a 10-team fantasy league.
Yeah. Should we close things by talking about the Seattle Seahawks?
Wow.
A professional football team that plays in Seattle?
We are previewing an actual game.
It's exciting. Sunday, the Cincinnati Bengals come to town, and they will come to town without Marvin Lewis. Can you name the head coach of the Cincinnati Bengals? Yes, I knew it. I pointed it out in the notes to try to play this game.
It was somebody who he's in the Sean McVay coaching tree, right?
That is correct. It's someone who's met Sean McVay.
He was maybe the quarterback coach.
That is accurate.
Zach Stacy.
That's a running back.
I'm close though, aren't I?
It is. It's Zach Taylor.
Zach Taylor.
It's the head coach of the Cincinnati
Zach
Bengals.
Zach Stacy being a running back for the Rams. That was extremely close there.
Is there any other Seahawks news that you feel like we should discuss after the Mina pod? DK Metcalf got announced as starter on the official depth chart for what that means.
I mean, we sort of knew that when we were talking to Mina. It was fun seeing the official depth chart and just being like, let's go. I mean, everybody's there.
Yeah.
All the names you're excited about were in that depth chart.
Clowney clearly going to play week one, be a big part of the role.
He's going to be part of the role.
He's going to be a big part of the role.
The quotes, like...
Hopefully they roll. Hopefully he's a big part of it.
I feel like there's a chance that Clowney has just a monster game in week one. You know, like, it's maybe a little bit tougher than when you're a linebacker, but like, Khalil Mack-style game in week one, where he just dominates everywhere on the field.
Well, especially, I don't know if you're aware of this, the Bengals left tackle, Cordy Glenn, still in concussion protocol as of Wednesday. So unclear whether he'll be able to play in this game. He's stepping in place of their first round pick, number 11 overall, Alabama tackle Jonah Williams, who underwent shoulder surgery in June and will likely miss the entire season. So the Bengals offensive line in a bit of flux at the moment, not what you want before going up against Jadeveon Clowney, even Clowney having, you know, 1 week of actual practice with the Seahawks.
That's great. It's all great news. I mean, it does feel like this is sort of a perfect storm setting up for the Seahawks, both of this trade. It's funny having these conversations where it's like, literally a week ago, I think I said to you, we were talking at the end of some preseason podcast, and I was just like, this is a bad defense. And now they trade for Jadeveon Clowney, and all of a sudden, just everything is different.
Like, seeing him out there and expecting him to play week one is a big part of it, too.
It's kind of crazy how different this is, though.
It escalated quickly.
Oh, it's so exciting. And now I'm like, I mean, I was looking forward to this game no matter what, but like the magnitude that I feel like I'm looking forward to this game, which seeing like Clowney's first ever game, the potential of DK Metcalf getting on the field, just Russ really playing again.
If DK Metcalf's healthy, he's going to get on the field. They don't have that many receivers. Jaron Brown was limited in practice Wednesday. That was a little surprising.
I was asked today by a person in my office who would be the second receiving option for the Seahawks after Tyler Lockett.
Was this like a fantasy-related question?
No. Okay. This is just, I was just chatting football in the gym.
Around the water cooler?
Yeah. I was talking to a Vikings fan.
Okay.
I told him I'm very high on the Vikings this year.
I'm not.
And I also told him Harrison Smith is way worse than Earl Thomas.
Accurate.
Do you know who I told him, though?
Metcalf?
John Arsua. That's who we should really be watching in this game. Metcalf's exciting. Metcalf is not going to have that big of an impact on the field, at least at the very beginning. John Arsua is going to be out there catching passes.
I don't have a real good sense of how this is going to go. It's going to be fascinating.
I'll tell you how it's going to go. First down completion to Arsua.
Okay. That'd be great.
He just knows how to get into open space. That's what you're going to be hearing.
I think Malik Turner is going to be prominently involved, as we talked about with Mina.
We will see. No, the wide receiver rotation is going to be extremely fascinating.
Just you wait until we talk about the Cincinnati Bengals wide receiver rotation in a minute here. So the Bengals and Marvin Lewis mutually parted ways after their third consecutive losing season.
Mutually parted ways.
Lewis had been the second longest tenured head coach in the NFL after Bill Belichick, despite the lack of postseason success. But, you know, he transformed. I think people are wildly unfair to Marvin Lewis.
I love Marvin Lewis.
Like, this franchise was a fucking joke before he got there. They were the fucking Clippers before he got there.
He's like the Freddie Kitchens of the Bengals.
Freddie Kitchens has to do it like five times before he could get on Marvin Lewis's level. And then you go out and hire a guy who's like, he was the only time as an offensive coordinator was as an interim replacement in the with the Dolphins after they
running
fired
for the Rams
coaches
2 years ago.
Yeah. Not a fan of that choice.
Of the Zach Taylor hiring?
I mean, who knows? Like, you know, I don't know anything about him individually, but the fact that he gets promoted two levels, I don't think that historically goes very well.
He's felt the same air as Sean McVay.
Like, the last time I remember that happening, I'm sure it's happened since then, but the last time I remember that happening was when Jim Zorn became the Washington Professional Football Team head coach.
Uh-huh.
And that ended up with him coaching the Seattle Dragons.
Seattle Dragons. Long term.
Seahawks legend.
The reality is when teams are trying to hire somebody who's in the coaching tree quickly after kind of like a hot head coach.
But with it's the not expectation even like he was like
that
the
they're going to do something similar.
There.
Like it usually doesn't go well, right? Like this is not a thing that's easily replicable. Like Sean McVay, you can't just sort of see what he's doing peripherally from a glance and then immediately replicate that. It is a very difficult thing to do that requires a very specific skill set of players and knowledge of football in general, right?
I mean, Matt LaFleur was the guy since he had actually at least been an offensive coordinator under Sean McVay. Like, that one made more sense. That was logical.
They're going two levels deep with McVay.
Exactly.
You know, these teams just want to score zero touchdowns in the Super Bowl.
Well, shots to tasteful profanity on that one.
No, This is a clown hire. But I mean, Marvin Lewis was a professional coach for a long time.
I don't know anything about Zach Taylor. Like, he could be the most brilliant offensive
their
mind.
Offense is just like so much motion. The Seahawks are so confused.
I can't rule it out. It could happen.
It's a clean slate. We have no idea what's coming. But Marvin Lewis was consummate professional. This is the exact kind of coach that I've always, always liked.
I mean, I think you're just underrated because of the fact that people are always like, but what if they could be better? And it's like, yeah, but there's also a lot of ways they could get worse.
Yes. Marvin Lewis
and
I'm
still never sure whether that makes me an optimist or a pessimist.
He's exactly a very good coach who never, ever had an extremely good roster.
No. Or an extremely good quarterback.
He never had the quarterback his entire time in Cincinnati.
So here's the bad news for Zach Taylor.
Okay.
The roster looks almost exactly the same this year.
Yes.
Their big additions in free agency were a guard from the Bills, John Miller, who got a 3-year, $16.5 million deal, and Giants nickelback B.W. Webb, who got 3 years, $10.5 million after leading the NFL with 6 pass interference penalties last year, per the Football Outsiders Almanac. Jonah Williams, as we mentioned, their first-round pick is likely out for the year. In the second round, they traded down and took Drew Sample.
There we go.
A run-blocking tight end.
I remember a lot of Kate Otten in the Husky offense last year.
Oh, boy.
It is kind of baffling. I mean, I told you this on the Over-Unders pod, that my expectation, or my hunch, was that the Bengals could be the worst team in the league. Basically, they were bad, and they ran it back, and that's almost never a good decision.
I mean, they weren't that bad. They were okay last year. So they will be, of course, without wide receiver AJ Green, who underwent ankle surgery last month and isn't expected back until at least week 3. That means a big opportunity for someone we've discussed earlier in this podcast, John Ross, who started 10 of 13 games last season in his first full year in the NFL, but had just 21 catches for 210 yards on 58 targets. If you do the math there, his 3.6 yards per target were the fewest among NFL players with at least 30 targets, according to Pro Football Reference. Tyler Boyd is the receiver to fear. He had 76 catches for 1,028 yards and 70 touchdowns in 14 games last year, catching 70% of his targets. The third starter listed for the Bengals is undrafted rookie Damian Willis, who had 9 catches for 118 yards in the preseason. So this could be, if you're correct, it could be a real showdown of undrafted rookie wide receivers in week 1 of the NFL season, which you've almost never seen.
Who Jazz Ferguson ain't out there? John Ursua was drafted.
Oh, you're right.
Put some respect on John Ursua's name.
That's a fair point. If Glenn is unable to play, he's backed up by journeyman Andre Smith, who you may recall from his Hard Knocks appearance when he was holding out back in like 2008.
Wasn't he on the Bengals?
Yeah, he was drafted by the Bengals.
And then
he's played for several other teams.
Then he journeyed.
And then he journeyed. And he journeyed back to Cincinnati. Last season.
He was drafted by the Bengals in 2008. Yada, yada, yada. He's on the Bengals.
Yada, yada, over the best part. I mentioned the crab
biscuit. The journey.
Was it crab biscuit or lobster bisque?
I mentioned the bisque.
Joe Mixon's the other player to watch, obviously, on the Cincinnati offense. Ranked top 10 in DR last year, his first full season as a starter, in his second season, and averaged 4.9 yards per carry.
And definitely a running back from having him in fantasy last year that they are going to ride heavily.
Yeah, because we mentioned the receiver card.
it does feel like sort of run defense is now kind of one of the Seahawks' strengths, and maybe always was one of the Seahawks' strengths.
No, it was not always one of them. Like, this year it was always one of their strengths.
Yeah, going into this year. I'm saying that Clowney makes them better at run defense.
Yes.
But they were probably going to be a pretty good
run. It was something they already prioritized in terms of bringing in Al Woods. And so
this sort of kind of fits into what the Seahawks are looking to do. I don't see this game being that close.
Really? You don't. First off, have you seen the weather forecast?
That it's going to rain? Rain will touch
it's
Russell Wilson's
body. It's a possibility
body.
Of rain. Now, the good news is the rain is not supposed to come until the afternoon.
Okay.
Like, so, I mean, obviously, this game will kick off
at 1 p.m. It starts at 1 o'clock. Define afternoon.
Podcast
times of day.
We'll pull this up again, but I believe it is not supposed to rain until, actually, this is not looking so great.
We got some scattered thunder showers.
Chances of precipitation are pretty consistent throughout the day, according to the latest forecast.
This is the segment that we like to call the Pelton Brothers Read the Weather Forecast.
Real perennial favorite. Now it looks
How does
like,
Friday look for Pelton Cast Live at Peloton Yacht Club?
Lovely. It looks more likely to rain early now than late. That's a change. But that's a bad change because we want it to rain like after the Seahawks have already built a lead.
Let it rain early and then be sunny in time for kickoff.
A gorgeous 81 on Friday for Pelton Cast.
There we go. It always shines on Pelton Cast Live.
We'll open the retractable roof.
The Seahawks are a much better team than the Cincinnati Bengals.
That is correct. They are playing at home.
They are playing this game at home.
Yep.
They have better players at all of the important positions to have better players.
We never said Andy Dalton's name during this. He's still involved.
He is a player. He is definitely their quarterback. I would be surprised if this wasn't Andy Dalton's last season as the Bengals quarterback.
It does seem likely that they will move on at some point soon. If they are the worst team in the NFL, I don't know if you've heard. And first off, the Dolphins still exist. Yeah. Hashtag fish tank. Second off, there's some notable quarterbacks in this year's draft.
Maybe they can draft Justin Herbert in the sixth round, where he belongs.
You really hate Justin Herbert.
He's bad. He's a bad quarterback.
He's overrated.
He's more Jake Browning than he is Jacob Eason.
Oh, Jake Browning did nothing wrong. Leave Jake Browning alone. First off, that would mean that he was a good college quarterback who didn't have the tools to succeed in the NFL.
I think the Seahawks will probably do their Seahawk thing. They'll run the ball a lot. They'll pick up third downs. They'll hit some big passes. Maybe they'll run play action a time or two. What they really need is Russell Wilson to be the offensive coordinator for a couple of series so they actually run the good offense. But they probably at no point will break the... Well, they won't take the good offense out of the garage for this game. They'll do their thing. They'll sort of herk and jerk their way to a lead, continue that lead sort of comfortably, and then win this game 23-6 or 23-10 or something like that.
I think 23-13. Very similar scores in these two games this weekend, in my opinion. Which would, in fact, cover the spread. But, yeah, I mean, this feels like an arm's length game to me.
Yeah. I mean, they just don't really crush teams. It would be surprising if they did. But also, it would be great if, I mean, you know, again, we're not going to learn a lot about the Seahawks team after this week one game. We'll learn a hell of a lot more next week. But if they do come out and, you know, say score touchdowns on three of their first four series or something like that, and then end up getting a big lead and just extending it through big defensive plays or something like that, we could be considering the Seahawks as maybe moving back into the echelon of being real contenders for the NFC West with the chance of making a big playoff push.
Look, I would consider myself a lifelong fan of easy victories. Lifelong fan.
Yeah, get an easy victory.
Percentage chances of victory here?
85%.
85? That's aggressive. I'd go about 80. And so we've fallen back into our classic Pelton Cast trope of me always being 5% lower.
We're back in mid-season form already.
You would barely know that it's been 30-some-odd weeks before since we've done this.
Most importantly...
We've eaten so much ramen and so many sandwiches.
It's been a long time.
Well, I mean,
it's like almost the entire year.
It's a 16-week season.
I've had 2 to 3 kids in that time
17-week season with the bye, 1 week of the playoffs. It's been 34 weeks.
Wow. Well,
so
I'm just excited for football to be back. I mean, it's the most fun weekends of the fall are when we host two football games.
And a live podcast.
In Seattle and a live podcast. I mean, we've got Friday Night Lights happening. Peltoncast Live at Peloton Yacht Club. We have the Huskies literally under the lights at Husky Stadium. We should check the weather for that one, too.
It's looking okay.
It's going to start feeling like fall out there. Especially when it'll be dark by kickoff or so, around kickoff.
A little bit after kickoff. The weather will get down into the temperature will get down into the 60s before the end of that game.
It's
going to
be hoodie weather.
It will be.
On Saturday night for the Huskies. And then Sunday, the Seahawks kicking off their season against the Cincinnati Bengals. This is going to be a great weekend of football.
Can't wait.
On that note.
Thanks for listening.
Thanks.